This Memorial Day weekend, I'm skipping Phony sales and shopping at Bob's Discount Furniture, where I don't have to worry about missing out on great savings. Because no matter what, when I shop, Bob's has trending styles at everyday low prices, ready to ship fast, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional with over 1,700 five-star reviews. So make the most of your summer and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download, and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Max St. John is the NFL manager of analytics schedule planning for the NFL. He's part of the small group that works to put together the NFL schedule. Mike North, Max St. John, a couple of others. These are the guys that are locked in a room for several months putting together the NFL schedule, which came out in its entirety on Thursday night. Max joined me on my podcast on Friday. And I started off by asking him about whether or not the guys that put this thing together get frustrated that the thing gets leaked in the days preceding the official announcement, really on the day of the official unveiling, gets leaked at times in its entirety. I mean, most of us knew Washington's schedule in its entirety before the 8 p.m. official league release. Does that frustrate the guys that put this thing together? Here's what he said.
First of all, thanks for having me. Great to be on. We are obviously not a big fan of the leaks, but truth is we need to get this information out to everyone before the official release date. So kind of going back a few days, we got final approval on our schedule at noon on Tuesday. From there, it's kind of starting the paperwork, getting the press releases, the team schedules ready. The teams found out starting at 2 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon. So at that point, they had their full schedule. They could get everything ready for ticketing, for the social media unveiling, all that good stuff. Thursday, we reveal it to our network partners. So there is a good, 24, 36 hours where the schedules are out. And as that kind of gets passed along, unfortunately, some people are able to pick it up and see some of the schedules. Something we definitely try and limit, but it's just kind of a factor of how things work in terms of just getting the teams and the networks the games ahead of the full release. So
I guess
we try and limit it as much as we can.
Yeah. I guess on some level, like any conversation about this is good conversation. It's just that it's like Christmas morning and the opening of gifts. It's anticlimactic now when it comes out. There used to be a level of excitement for the buildup for 8 o'clock in the unveiling that we just don't get to experience anymore. But it sounds like you guys aren't thrilled by that either. All right, so let's start. Go ahead. Did you have something to add to that?
I was just going to say, well, maybe we don't have the excitement around if teams kind of know all of their games by that point or the windows. There's still the excitement around the big social media unveiling at 7:30. That's kind of really turned into its own big thing in recent years. So that's at least something else we can point to.
Yeah, no, and some of them were really creative for sure. All right, give me what the big challenges were for you guys as you took on this task of 272 games over several months.
I would say the first one is the number of international games we're playing. We're playing 9 international games, and we have certain structures that we try and have around those games in terms of rest and coming home after the international games, Commanders being one of them. Our general practice is if you're playing an international game the week before, we'll either try and get you home or have a game in the same time zone or one time zone away. We don't want you taking a super far West Coast trip before you have to go to fly to London. Next week being your international game, and then we have a pretty big commitment. If your stadium's available, we'll either get you a home game that following week or we'll get you your bye. No guarantee that you'll get your bye. That was previously something we've guaranteed that we've been able to get away from, but we'll make sure you're at least, if you're coming and playing a game and your stadium's available, we'll get you to a home game after. So obviously a lot of further travel this year. We're playing in Australia for the first time. Had to make sure the Rams and the 49ers got back to a home game after that. Playing in Brazil, this kind of goes to what I was just talking about. The Cowboys are playing week 3 in Brazil. Their stadium's blocked in week 4. We can't get them home. We don't do week 4 buys. So we had to give them, unfortunately, a road game in week 4, but that was something that's out of our hands. That's probably the biggest complexity going into the season as our international games grow, continue to have kind of things we need to work around within the schedule.
Do the teams have any input? Do they get a chance to say, we'd really prefer the bye week, even though it's not guaranteed anymore after the international trip? Or, you know, certainly there are stadium conflicts, I would imagine, that have to be worked around. But do the teams have any input, and do they have, you know, one thing that they can ask for that they're granted?
They absolutely have input. So mid-February every year, we send out our team forms. The teams get back to us. Our stadium is unavailable for these dates and these windows. And separately, they have a handful of things. We'd be really excited to play on Christmas this year. We don't want to do this. We really want our bye after our international game. So every team has the opportunity to do that. Again, we get a lot of similar requests. Everybody wants a midseason bye. Nobody wants to play in Florida in September. Nobody wants to play in Buffalo in December. So we're unfortunately not able to grant these requests to everyone. But if there's something we've repeatedly done to a team, a great example of this is last year, Green Bay reached out to us. They said, hey, we've started our season week 1 on the road for 7 consecutive years. Why do you keep doing this to us? Can't you get us home in week 1?
Right.
And that's something where it's like, you know what? That's maybe not something we focus on. This is a concern to you. We've done it to you for 7 straight years. Like, that's probably something that we should consider. So every team has an opportunity to reach out to us and reach out to the league office about what's important to them. Again, a lot of the requests kind of overlap that we can't grant them to everybody, but we certainly listen to all of our teams.
What were Washington's requests back in February?
They didn't have too many. One that we unfortunately weren't able to give them is they actually wanted to pair their West Coast trip. You guys are playing at San Francisco and at Arizona this season. So that was something like, hey, if it fell into place, we'd love to kind of pair our trip, play in San Francisco or Arizona, and then stay out west for the week and play that next game. That's something, again, if we did it for every team that requested it, I unfortunately don't think we'd get a schedule done, but I think it's still an okay place for Washington. They play a Monday night game in San Francisco, a little extra time to get out there, and the bye, not intentionally, but the bye fell right after that game. So right after their long trip, they can come back to a bye as well.
Do you consider net rest days, like a team that had a disadvantage in net rest days a year ago, maybe you look at giving more of an advantage to the following year or not?
We certainly look at it. We at the league office, we have a great research group. I'll give Mike Lopez and Tom Bliss a shout out because they've written a whole paper on this buy advantage and rest disparity and have kind of come to the conclusion that it's not really impactful for our teams. We feel pretty comfortable. I think a great example to point out is the 49ers of a couple years ago. They had a negative 20-something rest disparity. They went to the Super Bowl that year. That's not something we'll have certainly some teams complain about, but as a league office, we feel comfortable releasing a schedule with teams with a higher net rest disparity than some others because we don't think it's a big disadvantage for anyone. Truthfully, don't think it's super impactful.
All right, there were a couple of interesting, options for Seattle in the kickoff game on Wednesday night, September 9th. Why New England in a rematch of the Super Bowl?
To start with, it's I don't think a Super Bowl rematch is more interesting. It's as interesting as it can be to really start the season. You push it a little later into the season. Storylines from that next season kind of started to take over. We really wanted to start there. There's actually some kind of cool parallels because the last time before this year we played a Super Bowl in San Francisco, it was Denver and Carolina.
Yep.
Super Bowl rematch next year for the opening Thursday night game. So we're kind of having some cool parallels there as well. And of course, we wanted to spotlight these two teams. Seattle obviously had a great year. New England went all the way to the Super Bowl. They have countless primetime games throughout their schedule. We felt pretty good about having that big game week one, two of our best teams from last year wanting to spotlight them.
You know, I remember maybe a couple of years ago when I had Mike on the show, he essentially said there's this kind of a discussion about that first game. Everybody's going to watch regardless of who's in it. And so why not save the better matchup for another time on the schedule? But it really looks like you guys have gotten away from that because last year was Cowboys-Eagles. The year before that was Ravens-Chiefs. I guess the Lions weren't necessarily supposed to be good in 23 going into that opener at Arrowhead. But why kind of back to really kind of heavyweight matchups?
I would say I would kind of point this to Thanksgiving of last year. Traditionally, yeah. That is exactly what we had done in our big windows. We know there's kind of a base audience there. We can play maybe not our biggest game in those biggest windows. And we really took a swing last year playing Dallas, Kansas City, and Detroit, Green Bay on Thanksgiving. And those were our two highest viewed regular season games ever. So really kind of expanding that thinking across all of these tentpole events. But Thanksgiving Eve and Thanksgiving put one of our biggest games, maybe our biggest rivalry at the moment, the sort of Brady Manning of our era between Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, putting that on Thanksgiving night. We're really taking swings there, having some huge games on Christmas. One that I keep pointing to is not only having Green Bay, Chicago to start the day, a playoff rematch between Buffalo and Denver in the middle, but also having Seattle Rams as the nightcap as well, the two teams that were competing with the 49ers for the NFC West last year. They played some awesome games last year. They played in the NFC Championship, really spotlighting that in one of our biggest windows is an opportunity we wanted to pounce on.
I figured that the Rams coming back from Australia probably wouldn't get a bye week, and then that meant Monday night was, you know, a possibility at home in week two. But just how about the fact that they've got four primetime games in their first 5 weeks with, by the way, the non-primetime game being at Philadelphia.
At Philadelphia?
Yeah. So, is a team happy about playing four standalone primetime games in the first 5 weeks? Is that something that they embrace, or do you try to avoid it and just couldn't?
I think it depends on the team, and the Rams are one that really, really embrace it. They love having their team in a national spotlight, and they were frankly pretty thrilled with their schedule to have all these national windows. Part of the reason for that as well is, especially that week two game, there's always complications in shared stadiums. So there are some stadium blocks around weeks 3, 4, and 5 in SoFi that we knew both teams needed to get home in week two. And so that meant we really needed to find a national window for one of those. And that's kind of where Rams Giants ended up falling. But they're definitely a team that's been pretty thrilled. They have 7 primetime games, as well as some other CBS and Fox doubleheaders. They're pretty thrilled with their schedule.
Speaking of primetime games, I kind of guessed this too, and I'm wondering if my reason for guessing it is correct. But tell me why a 5-12 Washington team not only has 5 standalone nationally televised games, 4 of them in primetime, but also could potentially get flexed to standalone games on Saturdays late in the season. I think Tampa and Washington are the only two that could happen to in both weeks 16 and 17. So why the spotlight, on a 5-12 team like Washington?
I think a couple things. One, I know it was a little bit of a down year last year, definitely some injuries impacting the team, unfortunately, but this team isn't that far removed from a run to the NFC Championship game. And frankly, a lot of the teams on their schedule, we felt like these were big games that warranted primetime windows, not even starting with primetime, but starting with Philadelphia and Dallas in the first 2 weeks. Those are Fox 425 doubleheaders in our biggest viewed window on Sundays. Like, they are in plenty of big games throughout. And one that I can point to, if you remember from that 2024 season, There was an Atlanta at Washington game that was sitting in the Week 17 TBD pool that actually got moved to Sunday Night Football, went to overtime, played an awesome game. That was Washington clinching their first playoff berth in a few years. So we definitely didn't shy away from them. We definitely think their schedule and the team warranted a handful of primetime games.
Tell me about just what goes into those late week Saturday flex games, and how you come up with the group of games that the league will eventually choose from to move.
Part of it is an appearance count. So we have certain obligations to our network partners, whether they be an NFC team on Fox or an AFC team on CBS. We need a certain minimum number of appearances on those networks. These teams also get filled in to Sunday night and Monday night and Thursday night football and the international games on NFL Network, all these variety of windows. But we'll always have a handful of teams that have a couple appearances to spare. And we think that's a great opportunity to give the scheduling team that flexibility. I mean, if it were up to Mike and I, we'd love to put the entire back half of the schedule as TBD and every, you know, for a few weeks in advance, we get to decide, oh, this has turned into a big game. Let's put it on this window, this window. So that's really not practical, but this is kind of what we have right now. We're able to identify four or five games. This year, it's only four in the Week 16 and 17 TBD pool. Decide 12 days in advance, like we did with Washington Atlanta a couple years ago. Hey, this game has played its way into a national window, whether it be one of the existing windows that we've set aside for Saturday, or they get flexed to Monday, Sunday, or Thursday night football. We really like having that flexibility, especially late in the season. Those games aren't played until December and January, and we're sitting here on May 15th trying to guess who's going to be playoff relevant. So just having that flexibility is really, really impactful for the scheduling
game. By the way, I noticed that the pool of games is smaller this year. Is that because both of those weeks are doubleheader games on Saturday, or are they tripleheaders?
They're doubleheader games on Saturday. There'll be two games in Week 16 and two and 17. Last year, we had a two-game Week 17 Saturday, but we had five games in the pool. This year, we ultimately ended up with four. There's no rhyme or reason to it, really. But we really, I would say, emphasis not on the quantity of games in there, but the quality of games in there. And we feel like we have some pretty strong games throughout those pools.
I thought, Max, there was a requirement for everybody to have at least one short week turnaround game. And yet there are five teams, the Raiders, Jets, Cardinals, Titans, and Dolphins, who will play every single game until the end of the season, and flex could, you know, play into it on Sundays without one short week turnaround game. When did that change, and how did you go about sort of just determining who would benefit from that? I know they're not in prime time, they're not in standalone games, but their schedule's a lot more consistent than anybody else's.
Yeah, so initially when that Thursday Night Football package was created, every team ended up on the schedule. There was a limit. You could play one short week. So when we only had those 16 windows, depending on how you count Thanksgiving and whatnot, we had to basically have every team fill out one of those games. After that season got the flexibility, allowing teams to play multiple short weeks, so long as they were spaced out, there weren't multiple of them on the road, things like that. So that's after that season, we were able to get the flexibility where you can have a team appear twice on the Amazon schedule. So there's a handful of teams, Baltimore, Denver, Green Bay, Houston, New England, Pittsburgh, that are going to appear twice on the schedule. We have that ability now as a scheduling team to put some of those teams I rattled off between Denver, Green Bay, Houston, New England, and Pittsburgh. Five of those were playoff teams last year. That's kind of our mantra around here, is biggest and best games and biggest and best windows. So really trying to spotlight those teams we think are going to be competing for playoff spots in their divisions and whatnot. Really want to make sure we get those teams into national windows.
All right, let me give you my two gripes about this schedule in general. Okay, number one is this. I mean, I love the NFL and I love college football. I understand why 2 years ago you had to play the Saturday games up against the first round triple header college football playoff games, because Christmas was on a Wednesday and you needed those four teams to have ample time to turn around and play two Netflix games on Christmas Day. But last year and this year, you could have passed on going head to head with the triple header on December 19th. Last year was December 20th with college football. Why has the league chosen to play games up against those college football playoff games?
Truth is, that is a Saturday we played. I think it's something like 38 of the past 41 years. We've been on this weekend forever. Third Saturday in December is when we play games. And if you remember, we started, you nailed it correctly. We needed those teams to go from Sunday to Saturday to Wednesday in order to land on that Wednesday Christmas the first year. We had some success with that in the 24 season. We wanted to repeat it in 25. We actually worked with college football. Hey, how can we better stagger our games? So what ended up happening, if you remember, the Commanders being in one of those games,
yep.
We had college football play a game on Friday night at 8 o'clock and then another game Saturday at noon. Their next game started 3:30 on yep. Saturday. The NFL, we typically on these doubleheaders will do like a 4:30 and 8. We slid it a little bit back. We started at 5 and 8:20. That gave college football a little more breathing room in the earlier part of the day. We've played on this weekend so many times historically. Knowing college football is going to be on there, we definitely made a conscious effort with them to try and space that out.
I just remember that first year being, this is a one-off because of the Christmas situation falling on Wednesday. And I thought, you're right, the NFL's owned that Saturday for as long as I've been a football fan. And last year, the NFL outrated and kicked college football's ass, in part because the two college games that were going on simultaneously were blowouts. And the best game was the first game, which was the Miami-Texas A&M game. As a football fan, though, I'd rather not. I mean, look, I don't have a choice. I have two screens going anyway. Yeah. But I'd rather not have to be focused on both of them. The other thing, and it's not necessarily a gripe, it's just a curiosity. Last year, the Washington and Philadelphia, after playing in the NFC title game the year before, didn't play until the end of the season, where they played twice in 3 weeks. This year, the rematch of the NFC title game, Seattle and the Rams, you did the same thing, where they're going to play twice over the final 3 weeks of the season. I remember saying to Mike last year, Max, the problem with that is there's risk that one or maybe even both games could end up being meaningless by the time you get there. With Philly and Washington, they were meaningless because Washington was bad. Why that strategy with high-profile NFC title game rematches with division teams waiting until the end to play the games?
Truth is, we really, really love having division games late. You know, you start the season, there are so many storylines that we can really hit on. There's kind of an inflection point in the middle of the year where it becomes less about those storylines from the offseason, more into the current season and playoff races and whatnot. That we love having those divisional games late. So we definitely try and backload the schedule a little bit with division games, especially with Week 18 being all division sure. games. We like having division games at the end of the year. That's something where fans really start caring at that point about the playoff races in the NFC and AFC and all their divisions. We want to make sure we have games with playoff implications late in the season. So it wasn't necessarily forced that we put those in 16 and 18, but I do think, I know it's a little bit of a risk, like you said, maybe it doesn't mean anything, but maybe it's similar stakes to that Thursday night football game they played in week 16 last year, which ultimately got the Seahawks the one seed. The Rams had to go there on the NFC championship on the way to Seahawks winning the Super Bowl. So definitely like having division games late.
All right, two more, and I appreciate the time. The first is just Thanksgiving Eve. Obviously, it's a revenue opportunity, another revenue opportunity. And I understand with the ESPN NFL network merger and some of the games coming off the NFL network, et cetera, there were these games that were standalone opportunities for streamers. So I'm just curious as to what went into the thinking with respect to a night that typically has been a big family night, a big party night, the night before Thanksgiving. I don't know that you can play a game on any night or any day that it won't be watched. I think we're all addicted to it. But give me just some of the thoughts that went into playing on Thanksgiving Eve.
One is, like you said, kind of tying it to a lot of that family time. I mean, we spend a lot of Thursday as football fans watching those big games throughout the day. And also some changes in Nielsen measurement, better capturing out-of-home audience, and just kind of having a lot of interest around these sort of tentpole games that we felt this would be a good window. It's frankly a little bit of an experiment. It's usually college basketball and other things on that day.
Right.
That we felt that as being the NFL, we'd be able to certainly draw audience to that new window. And of course, being the first time we're playing in that window, we wanted to put a strong game there. That's why you see Green Bay and the Rams. So pretty, we think, unique opportunity. But as, like I mentioned at the start, really trying to put some better games into those Thanksgiving windows, similar thinking there. This is one of the big tent poles of the NFL season. what if we put a big game on Wednesday night leading into our usual Thanksgiving triple header?
When you said Nielsen out of home, you're talking about more measurement of what, mass gathering watching?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, last one. Chicago and Buffalo, both on Thanksgiving Day and Christmas Day. Is that something that teams have to approve?
It is not. We typically, best practice, we'll try not to have a team host on both days. So Dallas is an example from last year. They hosted on Thanksgiving, but they came and played at Washington. So a lot of these teams really love playing in these holiday windows, knowing how many fans, being these big tentpole holiday events for the NFL, how many people are watching. They love being in these big windows. So not necessarily something they explicitly approve, but a lot of teams will reach out to us and are pretty thrilled to play in these holiday windows. And we'll definitely make a conscious effort not to schedule a two home games for a team. We don't necessarily think that's fair for fans as well. So that's something we'll definitely take into consideration. Detroit's another example. They played on Thanksgiving last year, of course. Yep. They played at Minnesota on Christmas as well.
Congrats. I know it's not easy. I know it's a lot of work, but it's always fun to see what it looks like when we get there, and I appreciate the time.
Thanks for having me. It's great to talk about the schedule, especially with someone who understands it as well as you do.
That was Max St. John from the league office, part of the team that puts together the NFL schedule. A couple of follow-ups to that conversation, and then more NFL when we come back.
B. Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Of course, we are brought to you by Root.
This Memorial Day weekend, I'm skipping Phony sales and shopping at Bob's Discount Furniture, where I don't have to worry about missing out on great savings, because no matter what, when I shop, Bob's has trending styles at everyday low prices, ready to ship fast, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional with over 1,700 five-star reviews. So make the most of your summer and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Food, the official show sponsor of Bemidji and Finley. Don't melt this summer. Upgrade to high-efficiency HVAC and get 60 months same as cash on qualified equipment until May 31st. Keep your cool and your cash. Find a Rood Pro partner at Rood.com. If it ain't Rood, it ain't right. We are excited right now to jump on the Rood guest hotlines and talk to our friend Justin Mello from Sports Illustrated. Justin, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Appreciate you gentlemen for having me. It's nice to have some OTA football content on the timeline. It feels like we're getting back into the swing of things here.
That's right, man. We were at Commander's rookie mini camp a couple weeks back, and they'll have OTAs next week. We'll be out there. Wanted to talk to you. You do a lot on the NFL draft, and I know you wrote about the fit of Catron Allen, the fat man, the Penn State running back, coming to Washington. Just kind of give me your thoughts.
Yeah, I really liked that pick. You know, round six, 187 overall. You know, pre-draft, I did a lot of work on him, of course, and very productive back. I think pro-ready frame, really good size. I think probably the most important trait a running back can have going from college to the pros might be the most underrated. is having good vision, right? And when I watch him run the football, he runs like a pro-ready back, and I think that's going to benefit the Commanders a lot. He leaves Penn State, you know, all-time rushing leader in program history, nearly 4,200 rushing yards throughout his time there as a Nittany Lion. Don't think you can overstate, you know, the level, the size of that achievement. Obviously, one of the better programs around college football over the last 50-plus years. So for me, really like the fit. And then, you know, I don't know if I'm getting ahead of myself here, but you look at that depth chart in Washington, and it certainly feels like that there might be some opportunity for him to carve out a role. You know, they, of course, Bill Krosky Merritt heading into year two, I think had a, you know, an up and down rookie year. The hype might have gotten a little out of control going into year one. They make some changes there, right? Chris Rodriguez no longer in the room. They bring in a couple guys, you know, short-term deals who are I would call them Band-Aid solutions. Rashad White, you know, Jeremy Ford. The latter of which, Ford, you know, I'm not even convinced that he makes that roster, right? They bring back Jeremy McNichol. So it's a crowded room, but in truth, it's probably more quantity than quality. So certainly feels like, you know, Catron Allen has a good training camp, a good preseason, whatever it is. Certainly seems like there's opportunity for him to carve out a role for himself in that room.
Does he have RB1 potential? And what does that even mean? Because he's a sixth-round pick who is trying to supplant a seventh-round pick who at one point kind of was the RB1.
I think he does a lot of good things, right? Could he be the RB1 in this room? I could see it. Do I think he's a true RB1 in terms of, you know, high-end running back in the NFL? No, I don't think I'm comfortable going there, okay. Right? I think there's probably a reason that he was a sixth-round pick. And, you know, my pre-draft scouting report would say those reasons are there's probably a cap ceiling, right? Like, he's not the most explosive guy that I've ever seen, not the most dynamic. I don't know that he's breakaway speed in the open field. I don't think he has those things, right? But if I look at, you know, what this team is going to be, and I think it's probably going to be running back by committee, right? I think 100%. Everyone's going to chip in and help. I don't think there's anyone that's going to run away with this job. I think he's a, you know, an RB by committee kind of guy because he's big, he's physical. So immediately I think, well, first, second down, you know, between the tackles, goal to go, you know, short yardage. A lot of what Chris Rodriguez did for them, right? For a period of time before moving on. So I think he's got that potential. And if you can get that kind of guy in the sixth round, I think that's a win. But in terms of being, you know, a true high-end RB1 in the NFL, I think a lack of, you know, breakaway speed and dynamic athleticism, the explosiveness, I think that probably holds him back from reaching that category.
Yeah, I mean, just watching him run, and granted it was rookie minicamp and there weren't pads on and stuff, but Dan Quinn said you could see the power, and watching him at practice whenever that was, you know, 2 weeks ago, I could see the path for him with C-Rod and Jacksonville. To me, they're not looking for an RB1. It's going to be Bill, it's going to be Fat Man, and it's going to be Rashad White. I think White's going to have a big role here, but I do think there's a true path to a roster spot for Fat Man. I think you're right about Jerome Ford being on the outside. McNichols just makes plays for this team, and I think he'll be part of the 70 one way or another. Whether he breaks camp on the 53 or not is different. NFL rosters have changed so much now with the changed practice squad rules that veterans right. can be on there. Justin, how much has that hurt maybe, you know, Saturday draft picks that veterans can be on these practice squads now?
Well, I think number one, there's a number of factors that go into it. It's a devalued position around the NFL. I still believe that. Just look at the way that they get paid, right, compared to other positions. They are one of the lower paid positions on the football field. So there's a devalued nature to it. There's a you're replaceable nature to it. I mean, you look at the way the Commanders went about it this offseason. They let Chris Rodriguez go. They bring in a couple of cheap guys on short-term deals, and then they just draft a guy in the sixth round. And then they pair all those three additions with a sophomore day three pick, and they're going to say, well, we're good. You know, we feel good about what we have. You wouldn't do that at cornerback. You wouldn't do that at pass rusher. You wouldn't do that almost anywhere else, right? Yeah. So there's certainly a devalued nature to it. And then, sure, you know, I think the practice squad rules have played a role as well. And you talk about someone like Jeremy McNichols, who I covered closely in Tennessee for a long for a period that he was there. We used to call him Jeremy Nick Weapon, you know, because he just makes plays, I think, for that offense or special teams, whatever unit is on. He's a guy that won't be denied. And yet he strikes me as the kind of guy, and you kind of hit the nail on the head there. If he doesn't make the 53, you probably feel pretty good about your ability to sneak him onto the practice squad.
Yeah.
Right? Due to the nature of the position. And then you've got other rules, right? Now you can call these guys up four times from the practice squad before you have to add them to your roster without them counting towards the, you know, your game day flexibility. So there's just so much you can do with the practice squad nowadays that I would say, yeah, I guess a devalued position like running back has probably suffered from it a little bit more.
I'm old enough to remember when you used to say, can this guy get 30 carries a game? Well, that's laughable. Now the new number is 20. Last year, as I look at the numbers.
Not even carries. 20
well,
touches.
True. Right. But I'm looking at the carries from last year. JP, you probably know this, but Bill got the most at 175. Chris Rodriguez was second at 112. The next two were Daniels and Mariota at quarterback. Then McNichols got 44. You want to know what the high carry total between Bill and Rodriguez was for a single game? Granted, they were behind by a billion.
I bet it's sub 20. I doubt either of them got to 20.
Correct.
It's probably like 16, 17.
18.
Yeah.
18.
That totally tracks.
So we're talking about maybe getting 12 carries a game, if that. One. 6 to 12 carries. I mean, these running backs have got to produce literally every time they touch the ball, or they won't see it again.
One thing that will be different for the Washington offense, though, is you're going to see a lot less designed quarterback runs. Not that quarterbacks won't be running, but there'll be less design there. Justin, I wanted to circle to another story you wrote. We're talking with Justin Mello from Sports Illustrated, covers the NFL draft. Give him a follow at Justin M underscore NFL. Certainly, you know, there's a role for Fat Man here, but let's go to the first round. You had an article about kind of underrated first round picks across the league. Jordan Tyson made your list. Carnell Tate made your list. I think Reuben Bain slipping a bit to get to 15 to Tampa. That totally tracks with me. What do you think about Washington being able to get Sonny Styles at 7?
Yeah, they have no complaints, I would imagine, right? Like, I think a lot of people thought pre-draft he probably goes 4 or 5, right? Tennessee Titans, New York Giants. You know, those two teams go in different directions. Titans decide to help their young quarterback. I get that. And then Styles, you know, being there at 7, I think Washington probably ran that pick to the podium, I imagine. I love it. I mean, I think that article was about first-round picks that kind of walked into dream scenarios as well, or I included him in that one too, because you get to go play for a defensive-minded head coach and Dan Quinn, you know, checkmark. You know, new defensive coordinator who's going to be calling plays, I think's got a lot of upside in that role, checkmark. They haven't brought back Bobby Wagner, so there's a sort of a leadership role there that's up for the taking, and also a high volume production role, right? From a tackling number standpoint, check mark. I think he's going to give them, of course, you know, more than Wagner could in coverage at, you know, that later stage of his career with his ability to turn and run and how long he is and he impacts passing windows. I just think the fit is seamless, right? And they've upgraded the front 7, right? Not just at, of course, that linebacker through him, but they brought in a couple of pass rushers. And I think when those defensive linemen are playing better ball, it makes a linebacker's job easier. So there's not a lot to not like, I guess is what I'm trying to say, about the fit between Sonny Styles and the Washington Commanders. I mean, he's got my vote for, you know, my early pick for Defensive Rookie of the Year, because I think he's just going to rack up numbers. And I think he has 130-plus tackles. I think he's, you know, they're going to deploy him in different ways. They're going to be creative and versatility with his usage. He could rush the quarterback. I think if you look at it's interesting. If you look at his pass rushing splits last year, he was essentially as productive as Arvell Reese was. And meanwhile, you know, Reese had all this projection to pass rusher. You know, no one did that with Sonny Styles. I get it. But the point is, give him opportunities to rush off the edge, blitz the quarterback, whatever it is, he can get after the pocket. So, turn and run in coverage, interceptions, fumbles forced. I think he's going to rack up numbers this year and probably run away with Defensive Rookie of the Year.
There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a he's walking into a position that's like tailor-made as well. What do you make of the third-round receiver, Antonio Williams?
Well, they had a role there, right? They had a slot open, I think, specifically at the slot position, I should say. Haven't brought back Deebo Samuel. The Brandon Ayuk thing is, I guess, kind of in limbo as we wait on movement there. I think Antonio fits. I think he can come in and, if needed, play the slot for them rather quickly. He's athletic. He's creative. Really good in the open field. He's very twitchy. I think he's got to hone in on the route running a little bit. There's, when you watch him on tape, there's a little bit of freestyling, which in all honesty, a lot of college wide receivers suffer from. I remember interviewing A.J. Brown when he was coming out of Ole Miss. I asked him what his favorite route to run in the offense was. He looked at me and said, we had a route called get open where we just kind of did what we wanted and we got open. And I said, oh dear Lord, who's running the offense? Like, what are we doing? Right. Who's running the offense? So you'd be surprised, right? Like a lot of these guys come out of college not that polished when it comes to the route running. So I think he's got to get better there. But that, again, that's kind of par for the course. But you watch him on tape. He's athletic. He's dynamic. He's twitchy. I think he's a tailor-made fit for the slot position. I think that's why they targeted him specifically, right, with that role in mind, not bringing back Deebo Samuel, kind of saying, okay, you know, admitting defeat maybe on that one. But I think if they need him to play, I think he could do it fairly quickly from the slot. Again, they bring in Brandon Ayuk, he probably gets pushed down the pecking order. And honestly, it's probably best for him, right? Like, you don't want to be too reliant on a rookie you drafted in the 70s. So, but he could do it. I think he's capable of playing reps, and, you know, maybe there's a role on special teams too, but excited to watch him kind of compete for opportunities in the slot this summer.
For sure. And I think there'll be real opportunities. We'll see kind of what happens with the Diggs stuff that's floating around, even the Ayuk. One more just about the DN they drafted, Josephs out of Tennessee. I watched him at rookie minicamp and was pretty impressed. Where did you have him evaluated?
Yeah, I thought he was, very athletic. He's long. You kind of like certain aspects of his frame. I think he's got to add more play strength and fill it out a little bit. But he's long and he knows how to use it and he's athletic. And I thought he had some, good production this past year for Tennessee. And you see the pathway. I know that pre-draft there were some sort of character questions. And, I won't get into it obviously, but whether it was work ethic or whatever it was, I know scouts had some question marks there. And that's probably why he ends up going, 147. Cause I personally thought the tape was a bit better than 147. But when it all comes together, I think there were factors that kind of led to his, day three slide, middle of round five, whatever you want to call it. But when you watch him on tape, I agree. Like I see the path, right? I think he's got some good linear burst and it is a bit linear, but better to have it than not have it, right? I think he can sort of threaten offensive tackles with speed and athleticism. I'd love to see him become a more diverse and flexible rusher. I think there are certainly opportunities to expand his arsenal and add something to his game so it's not somewhat similar on a snap-by-snap basis. But they're not going to ask him to play every down, right? He's athletic. He can do some things for them in certain personnel packages. And if he can kind of, get things going and attack this opportunity with vigor and effort, then I can certainly see a pathway for him developing into a contributor. Because, again, love the length, love some of the things that he does with the athleticism, but, got to get going in the right direction.
So when I talk to a real draft guy, I could go deep and really nerd out on this stuff. I'm going to ask you one difficult one and then circle back with a very easy one. Undrafted kicker Drew Stevens out of Iowa. I don't know that you scouted or watched him, but he's got the leg. Can he get the accuracy to be an NFL kicker?
Did I scout him? I have a great interview on the website right now.
No, Drew Stevens,
that I did. I will DM you as soon as we get. I've got a great interview that I did with Drew Stevens pre-draft, where we talked about all that. I asked him about bouncing power with accuracy, how he goes about that. Like, I had a deeper conversation with an undrafted kicker than any draft analyst should probably have.
I love it.
On a website. I did a great Q&A with Drew Stevens. I thought he was one of the better draftable kickers. I'll say this. He had a lot of interest pre-draft. Yeah, I got to speak to him about that off the record a little bit.
And yeah.
Can say it now because it doesn't matter anymore, but he had a lot of interest. He went to a bunch of, pro day workouts, things of that nature. I thought a team was going to draft him. I think that's big for Washington to get him where they did. I totally see a universe out there where he develops and becomes an NFL caliber starting kicker. There's only 32 of those jobs in the league, right? There's not a lot of them, but I like Drew. Couple of things he's got to work on, but you know, I think they got a good special teams coach down there in Washington.
Yeah, Larry,
he'll be able to compete this offseason, right? Like, you know, preseason training camp, he'll have lots of opportunities. Big leg, like you said, probably got to be a bit more accurate. But in all honesty, like, you look at numbers from college, we make this mistake a lot. There's really no predicting. Like, sometimes you'll see a 75% college kicker become an 88%, right, like, success rate in the NFL. And at the same time, you'll see a guy like, well, who was it? Was it Robert Aguayo a couple years ago, like out of FSU, Tampa Bay? You'll see a 90% college kicker become a 73% kicker in the NFL. I mean, it really is, you know, the mental makeup, the repetition, the reps, handling the pressure. I think that probably plays a much bigger role than we think it does when it comes. And that's why it's so unpredictable looking at, you know, college to the pros. So I like Drew Stevens, totally see it for him.
I like the fact he's undrafted. I have a very dim view of spending a single draft pick on a kicker.
I agree.
This year, there's only one guy. Only one guy taken. That was Trey Smack by the Packers. All-time name.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just these guys, they are kind of expendable, and they're weird in terms of who develops into a reliable pro leg.
My theory with college kickers, it's the only position in football that's harder in college than it is in the pros.
Because the hashes?
The hashes are one.
The ball's different, too. You know.
The operation is never as clean as it is in the NFL.
No, the operation
the long
is,
snapper to the holder in the NFL is
the
is
operation robotic. In college is a wild ride every single time.
But so that's exciting about Stevens. I got to talk to him at rookie minicamp, and he told us on the record he had calls from the Titans and the Bills. He didn't want to go to the Bills because Bass is obviously an institution there. But it seemed like he picked Washington, and he didn't seem cocky at all, but he feels he can come in and win this job, and that's why he wanted this job. The last one, you seem very bullish about Carnell Tate kind of immediately in Tennessee with Cam Ward. Obviously, Tate had a hell of a year at Ohio State. All the measurables are there. What makes you think he could hit big right away for the Titans?
Well, I like the situation he's landed in. You know, number one, Brian Daboll is his offensive coordinator. I think that's great. You see what Brian Daboll did with Malik Nabers a couple of years ago as a rookie wideout. He's got a pretty good track record, right? Got a lot out of Stephon Diggs in Buffalo. Even, you know, a guy like Gabe Davis, who, you know, made money that he, you know, probably, you know, was kind of outperformed, right, in Buffalo, overproduced, if you will. Cam Ward, I think, is primed to take a big year two step. I thought the world of how Cam Ward played last year didn't get a lot of attention. I understand. No primetime games. They were a terrible football team. He had three different head coach and play caller combinations, which is almost unheard of during his rookie year. And his top two wideouts were day three picks. And I thought for everything that he faced, I thought Cam Ward had a really strong rookie year. I think he's going to take a huge step, you know, in year two under a much better coaching staff and with Brian Daboll as coordinator. You watch Tate on tape. He was my number one ranked wide receiver the whole way, pre-draft process, and I'm glad it kind of played out that way. There's a lot to like. He didn't have one recorded drop at Ohio State last year, by the way.
Wow.
He's got some of the most reliable hands I think I've ever seen, honestly, or at least these last, you know, 5-10 drafts. Not one recorded drop. They're huge. You've seen his hands. They are massive. He engulfs everything thrown his way. He's big. I think he's got enough vertical speed. He makes contested catches, but he's also a route-running technician underneath. And I think the Commanders would have taken him at 7 if he was there. In all honesty, I really do. I think they went into this draft hoping they could get a receiver opposite Terry. But I do. I think the world of Carnell Tate, and I love the situation with Cam Ward and Brian Daboll. I think it's probably being underrated because they're the Tennessee Titans.
It's going to be fun to watch. Hey, Justin, thank you for the time, dude. Really appreciate it.
Pleasure was all mine. You know where to find me.
All right, man. Take care. Everybody give him a follow at @JustinM_NFL.
We find the hitting coach of the best lineup and the best offense in all of baseball, Matt Borgschulte. Matt, if I knew all it took was just bringing you to D.C. and then the team would never stop scoring, I'd have gotten on the radio and advocated for this years ago. Thank you for the...
I always know when a big holiday shopping weekend is coming because there are sales everywhere telling me to shop now or miss out. But when I shop at Bob's Discount Furniture, I never have to miss out because Bob's has the latest summer styles at everyday low prices. Plus, Bob's has tons of real five-star reviews for me to rely on, which is how I found a real marble elm dining set with over 600 five-star reviews, the Copper Radiance mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you five-star sleep, the ultra-comfy Phantom reclining sofa, which boasts over 1,000 five-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So when you're ready to skip the holiday weekend gimmicks and score five-star style for every room in your home, listen to the smartest shoppers around and shop at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Only at True North Stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Personal finance can feel like a pop quiz you didn't study for. This podcast is your study guide. On NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast, you'll hear from trusted journalists who explain the why behind major financial decisions. You'll get research-backed insights and clear pros and cons, whether you're planning a big purchase or just want to grow your wealth. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/moremessy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Time.
Oh man, that's certainly not the case. We got a lot of really good players that have made some great improvements and just really been fun to work with so far. So it's definitely an exciting time for the org.
Man, I know you're busy, obviously, with the big club, but in Fairfax, I got a group of 8-year-olds that are struggling to put bat to ball. What are your consulting fees like?
Oh man, no, I don't have any. No, I'd love to. Always love talking hitting and. No matter the age, we'll get after it and get them better.
Love it.
Matt Borg-Schulte is the hitting coach for the Washington Nationals. They're number one in Major League Baseball in runs, 271. They didn't get to this number of runs until a week into June last year without him. Runs per game, first in Major League Baseball, 5.53. RBI, tied for first in the big leagues and tied for first in the NL. Slugging percentage, fourth in the majors, third in the National League. OPS, fifth in the show, fourth in the National League. Are you surprised at all by how much this team has hit?
I mean, I can't say that I expected us to have this much success, but it's just, you know, I think the way that, you know, we were able to put the guys together with Tavoni and Blake setting the culture of the continuous improvement that every guy wants to make every single day, you know, and I think that really set everybody up to work on the things that they need to see improvements and kind of reach their potential. And it's been exciting to watch so far.
Matt, how do you see your job? In other words, I think with a positional coach or a pitching coach, hitting coach, et cetera, I feel like it's one part psychologist, one part approach, one part mechanical adjustment, you know, one part, you know, fixer. I mean, there's just a million things that go into it. I think a lot of people don't see. How do you view your role?
Yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, I think every guy requires something a little bit different in terms of all those things that you mentioned, with whether that's something with the approach, the mental, the physical approach, whether that's, you know, work we're doing with them on the swing, working in between at bats, having good conversations. talking through, you know, their approach, their preparation, what they're doing in the weight room to make sure that they're ready to go every single night. It's really an all around approach. And I think what, you know, we as a hitting staff have been able to do a good job with is being able to kind of cover all those bases. You know, we have Andrew Eight and Sean O'Malley who've done an amazing job with all the guys, just creating good relationships, getting the buy-in for the things that we need, that we want them to do to help them, you know, perform at their best.
So I was down in West Palm by the cages for several days, and I was watching you guys. And I mean, the amount of one-on-one time with Eight would have somebody, or O'Malley would have someone. You would be with the guy. And I asked a few players about it, and they're like, yeah, I'm getting more kind of one-on-one interaction than I've gotten. But the other thing was they were talking about implementable, like actual tips, pointers, things that were helping them that they haven't gotten in the past. I'm just wondering, give us an idea of like your coaching philosophy. Now, you've been in Baltimore, Minnesota in the big leagues before this, but then also you're the hitting coach. Those other two guys are your assistants, but as a team, kind of how this works with you guys all working with all the hitters.
Yeah, I think, you know, overall, like the goal for us as a hitting staff, like we want to score as many runs as we possibly can. I think we want to take an individual look at every guy, because James Wood, Nunez, Lyle, like everybody's a little bit different in what they need. And so if we try to do the same thing with every guy, we're just not going to get, you know, the most out of them. So taking an individual approach, making sure we're attacking like what each guy needs. And then I think one of the things that we've been really good with is we're on the same page as a hitting staff with everything that's going on with every hitter. We stay informed, you know, within each other and having those conversations individually with each player, but then circling back with each other on kind of how those things went. So that way, you know, every day that they come into the cage, if they're with, you know, a different coach than they were yesterday, we still are giving them the same information, continuing that development that they, you know, might have gotten the day before.
Nats hitting coach Matt Bourque-Schulte with us here on G&D. There are a million philosophies now, right? I mean, you know, teacher man on one side, like then there's some dude in a cage chopping wood like he's Rod Carew in the 70s on the other side. I mean, everything in between. What for you and your staff, for you guys, as you guys, you know, going through this, is universal? What has to happen, regardless of maybe your setup or some of the other designs and kind of newfangled ways to meet bat to ball with pitching as nasty as it's ever been?
Yeah. I mean, the number one thing for us is, like, we have to make good swing decisions. We have to own the zone. And we've had some guys make some really good strides with that. We also have some guys that are already really good at it. I think, you know, you look at James Wood and you see, you know, really good plate discipline. To me, that's number one in terms of what we have to do, regardless of anything else. You know, regardless of your swing, if you're controlling the zone, you have a good chance to have success and be productive at the plate, because your swing is not always going to be in the best spot. You're going to have, you know, times when it's, you know, there's some things you need to work on. And it's those periods, I think, that make the biggest difference, where you're still able to be productive and have good at-bats and help the team win because you're swinging at good pitches. The other aspect is that we want to hit balls hard. We got some guys that can do that, and guys that are making adjustments to that as well. And we want to hit the ball in the air. We want to hit line drives. We want to hit extra base hits. And, you know, those are kind of the big three main aspects. And obviously, like, you have to make contact to be able to hit the ball hard and in the air. And those are kind of the areas that we really want to hone in and focus on. And everybody's going to fall into a little bit different, you know, slot with that in terms of what is the most important for them.
The Nationals have the number one offense in the sport. We're talking to their hitting coach, Matt Bourque-Schulte, on Grant and Danny. You mentioned hitting the ball in the air. One of the things I harped on a lot last year analytically was that this team hit the ball at one of the hardest rates in all of baseball. But they also hit the ball on the ground a lot more than most teams did, and rarely hit it in the air collectively, you know, compared to the other teams around the sport. Jacob Young's a guy we talked to a lot about this early in the season. In the spring, you're seeing him now, a couple of home runs lately, on his way to blow past his career numbers in terms of long balls. But as far as getting the ball in the air, like, what is the actual work, the drill work, how do you go about improving that? And was that one of the first things after your interview process that you saw when you dug into the numbers were, wow, this team actually has a lot of guys that do hit it hard. Now we just got to get it off the ground.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. I think, like I said before, a lot of it starts with the pitches that we're attacking and taking a good approach to, you know, swing at pitches that we can hit the ball in the air on. And then, you know, from there, there's individual adjustments with swings. You know, we have a bunch of different drills that we can work to help guys, whether that's they need to, you know, swing up a little bit more or they need to swing down a little bit more so that they can, you know, really optimize the launch that they have and keep the bat on playing with the pitch as long as possible so they can adjust to multiple different shapes and speeds. And, you know, I think that's kind of the main way that we try to go about it.
How do you handle a philosophical difference or comfort maybe is a more important term here, Matt? In other words, a guy says, I'm comfortable doing this, and maybe that's, you know, your position may be, I need you to be uncomfortable because we're trying to get you better, right? Like, how do you deal with that with an individual player?
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, we were able to get past with a lot of guys from with Toboni and Butera really hammering that down in spring training and from the very start is like, we're going to train you guys really hard. We're going to make you uncomfortable. And the reason is we want the best out of you. And, you know, we've seen this work. And, you know, that was a big help in getting guys to kind of step outside their comfort zone, try something that's a little bit different in order to get results that are a little bit better.
I mentioned Jacob Young just as an example to exemplify what we're talking about here. Launch angle sweet spot percentage for him via Baseball Savant a year ago was third percentile. It's 77th percentile right now. I mean, we have these basic websites like Savant where we look at percentiles. I mean, what types of data do you guys care about? And I guess more specifically offensively, what type of numbers in terms of result, not process stuff that you're focused so much on, do you care about more than others? Or is there really legitimately no part of the result that you focus on because it's all process?
Yeah, I mean, we have some internal, you know, metrics that we'll use to have like an overall evaluation of, you know, the offensive product that a player is going to put out there. But I would say like the main number that we would use and that all the players would have access to and understand and most, you know, fans are starting to get used to would be OPS. Like, are you getting on base and are you hitting for extra base hits? And I think that's probably like the number that, you know, guys would be most interested in. You know, batting average is important for some, and it's not quite as important as it used to be in terms of an organizational philosophy. Like, obviously, getting a hit is important. And especially when there's runners on base, you know, we want to cash in those guys as much as we possibly can. So having that approach to be able to, you know, bring, you know, the tool that you need for that specific job is really, really important. But I'd say like OPS is probably from a number standpoint, the most important one that we focus on with the players.
One of the really cool things Danny and I get to do occasionally is we'll do these walk-off post-game interviews after wins down on the field. And so we'll watch the last inning or two occasionally, basically from behind the plate as we get ready to walk out. And I bring this up to say, I've been down there for a couple of the monster eighth innings at home that you guys have had, where everyone's like passing the baton and hitting homers. And you can see at that level, there's so much communication between your guys in the dugout over the iPad or just as they're at the on-deck circle or whatever. I don't remember that in the past. Is that naturally happening, or is that something that you guys have preached?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think everybody understands and feels that, you know, the better each one of their teammates do, the better, you know, they're going to be able to do to continue to have that pressure on the other team. But they want to actually, they really want to help each other. I think it's something that we have strongly encouraged them to do is that we can give them all the information in as simple as possible way for them to digest and be able to take that into the box. But there's nothing that we're going to be able to say that's going to compare to somebody that's actually been in the box against that pitcher. So having those guys come back, have that communication, hey, that slider looks like this, or this fastball plays a little bit up, or whatever the case might be for each pitcher, if we can get those guys to communicate as much as possible, which is, you know, awesome to hear that you're, you know, seeing that happen, you know, that's really, really important. Guys helping each other, working together to just, you know, pound out as many hits and runs against the pitcher as we possibly can.
Nat's hitting coach Matt Bourque-Schulte with us here on G&D. And Matt, you're much younger than me, but I've worked with high school hitters forever, and only over the last 5 or 6 years have guys started to speak a different language to me. And you've come up in this, and this is what I'm curious about. You know, I've worked with a kid who's like, my bat speed is 77 to 81. My exit velo is 83 to 88. I'm going, is that good? I have no earthly idea. I've never spoken that before in my life, right off the tee. And like, but these guys are born and raised in this now. It's like when I remember when my dad was trying to learn how to use the computer, I'm like, I don't know how to explain this to you. I was born in this. Like, I get it, and you don't. You're in that environment, I feel like, now. And in terms of speaking the language, was that a tough adjustment for you? Or you know, in terms of learning it on the fly, being able to teach it, just the difference in what hitters know and care about, I think, is something I'd love for you to expound on.
Yeah, I think that's definitely been the case over the past 4 or 5 years. Guys really honing in on that a little bit more than they have in the past. But I would say, like, it hasn't really, like, the goals haven't really changed.
Right.
And everybody has, you know, just because now that we can measure it a little bit better doesn't mean that nobody tried to, you know, swing the bat fast enough to hit, or bat speed was never important before. I think it's always been something that people have, you know, subjectively observed. It just, you know, now that we have a way to measure it, it just makes it a little bit more visible for everybody to be able to understand. But, no, from a communication standpoint for the players, like, we have all that information. We can use that. We can give that information to them and say, like, hey, here's where you're at. You know, we need to make some adjustments with this and that, so that, you know, when you do swing, you're swinging a little bit faster, you can get to more pitches, and then when you do get to them, like, there's a little bit more behind it, so we can get past the outfielders or in between them, or, and get more balls through, you know, for extra base hits or just base hits in general. So I think the better understanding that the players have, and it can help for sure.
Curious about James Wood, who has an MVP in his future. He's in the top 10 in most categories in all of baseball. He is super special. But you will hear the fan base pretty routinely talk about his lack of pull air percentage, so to speak. I watch him and I marvel because he goes the opposite way with power in a way that I've never seen before. It's like Soto and him and Judge and not many others, mm-hmm. right? And that's a great thing. And Judge, early in his career, by the way, the book on him was like, man, he needs to start pulling the ball for power. And eventually he did. I view James, because of the length of his arms, which are the longest in baseball, as that's always going to be a complicated, hard thing. What's your take on that? Is that something down the road where you'd like to see him pull it more? Or is it just like, let's not touch or deal with anything other than telling him, good job, buddy?
Yeah, I mean, I think the great thing about James is that he's always, like, working to try to continue to get better. And, you know, that's like, where we're headed in terms of getting better. And I think, you know, our philosophy or our thought process, like, he doesn't need to pull the ball to hit a home run. Now, if it, like, is affecting his bat path, his contact ability, you know, his ability to hit the ball in the air, of trying to go the other way, then, like, that's an adjustment that we can make. But I just want him to hit it hard and hit it in the air. Wherever it goes, it goes. And if it becomes a problem from hitting it the other way too much, which I don't think it is, and I'm not sure that it will be, I don't think he hasn't had an issue this year, and I hopefully, you know, he can continue to do that in terms of when he pulls the ball, hitting it, you know, on the ground too much. He's done a great job of continuing to hit the ball in the air this year. So, you know, that's not really something that I put too much into in terms of for the future. I'm really excited about this guy. He's one of the most impressive hitters I've ever seen. And, you know, you look back and see some of the balls that he hit this year, whether that was the left on left off gauge to the opposite field bullpen, 440 or something like that. And, or the ball he hit off Stanek, you know, dead center line drive. I think the second baseman might've jumped for it and it went out dead center. You know, it's just impressive to be with him and watch him every day. And like I said before, the great thing about him is that he doesn't just want to be good; he wants to be great. And everybody can see like he has that potential. And you know, I really think he could be, you know, one of the best hitters in the league, or if not the best, for a long time coming.
Matt, Dylan Crews back in the show, and he looks to have kind of a different stance, different approach from when we saw him last in spring training before he was in AAA. Would you guys work on with him, and kind of one of the key focuses?
Yeah. Dylan's done a great job. It's been fun to watch his attitude, the way that he's attacked everything throughout this process has been, you know, nothing short of outstanding. Yeah, like you said, with the setup changes, just getting him a little bit taller. He does a great job of like sinking down into his legs naturally. So getting him in a little bit taller setup where, you know, he can stay athletic and not get too far down and have, you know, the head movement and just, you know, down and up and you know, that kind of move, as well as just getting into a little bit more relaxed position and just let his bat speed play, you know, so that he can make more consistent contact with pitches, as well as being able to recognize and eliminate some of the chase that he's had in the past. And I think Travis Fitta, Brian Dalbec in AAA have done an amazing job, as well as with CJ Gilman to really work on those things with him on a consistent basis. And, you know, hopefully he can continue the progress that he's made in AAA here.
I wonder, with a guy like CJ Abrams, whose walk rate has gone from in his career right around 5%, to double that this year at over 10%. You guys have made major strides there. Is walk rate something that you actually chase, for lack of a better word, like that you're looking at? Or is it just a byproduct of the things that you actually care about, like chase rate and IDing and those types of things?
Yeah, I think walk rate is 100% something that we're paying attention to. Obviously, like you say, with CJ's improvements, it's been amazing to see when you can add that to his game. Like I said before, the swing's not always going to be amazing. So especially with as much damage as he can do and as much as he can hit, you know, guys are going to continue to try to get him to chase pitches and try to get himself out. So the better that he can be at limiting those or making those adjustments after he does it maybe one time in the at-bat, that just makes him a dangerous, even more dangerous player, especially with what he can do when he does get on base. You know, stealing, going first to third like he did last night, and, you know, just really making it challenging on defense. So, you know, that's been a huge part for him. Again, like I said, I think that's where, you know, we try to limit those times in the season that everybody's going to go through where, you know, you're not squaring up the ball every single time. But if we can still have that production of, okay, we're honing in on that middle of the plate, we let those edge pitches go, where even when our swing isn't perfect, we can still hit pitches down the middle pretty well. And then, you know, also by laying off those pitches, we can take our walks, get on base, and still be very productive for the offense.
Matt Borg-Schulte on Grant and Danny. We've kept you too long. This will be the last one because I'm curious if this falls under your purview and now your coaching department, or if this is a bigger thing somewhere else. Challenging of pitches. You know, it hasn't been a strength necessarily early this year for the guys at the plate offensively. Working on when to challenge, when not to, also, you know, game situation, all that. Is that something you and your staff talk to the guys about, or is that more of a Blake, like, different department thing?
Yeah, no, I think it's been a combination. You know, certainly it hasn't been our strength so far this year, although I think we've done a better job as of late than we have early on. And I think that's kind of what we expected. Is that as the season goes on, you know, we start to get a better idea of the zone because it might be a little bit different than what they've been used to in the past. So, yeah, I think it's a philosophical thing. We want to try to get the guys to use them in the right situations and still have some late when we need them, you know, in the late innings if the game gets tight.
Matt, really appreciate the time and insight, buddy. Congrats on all the success, man. Keep it up. It's been great.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
Nationals hitting coach Matt Borg-Schulte on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
All right. We tracked Rhonda down. Drabby called her. Of course, she was up. I assume she was up. Rhonda. Cousin Rhonda.
Oh, yeah. She's been up since about 5:30.
You've been up. Now,
maybe earlier.
Shot out of a can.
Now, hold on, Rhonda. Did Drab prep you? You know you can't curse, right? I just want to prep
I'll give you a choice.
Yeah.
Oh, There ain't no prepping me. Right. He's got a buzzer.
I know, you want the tip from the twisted. I know. Just don't curse. That's all. Because the last time I talked
Cousin
to
her, Rhonda.
I'm trying.
Yeah, okay.
Cousin Rhonda, what have you been up to lately?
Okay, now, I don't know about the rest of the boys that don't like truck drivers, but I don't know if any of them know farmers.
Okay.
Okay? You knew Dad, so you knew a farmer, plus your mom's got some family out in Illinois that's got a farm.
Right.
And you know me.
Right.
Whether you boys like me or not, I don't really care.
Everyone likes you.
I love you, Rhonda.
I just said don't curse. Just don't curse. That's all.
So what have you been up to lately?
Are you still driving?
There, did you hear that?
No, don't swear.
I'm not driving a big truck, no, but I'm going to give you the tips from the Twisted first.
All right.
Or from the peanut section.
All right.
If you're going to pass a truck, period, a big truck, tell your kids, if you've got room, make sure you can just go, because these foreigners will hit you and keep driving, and they may never find them.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, that's Rhonda's point to ponder.
Okay. All right. I don't know what that
now
means.
Rhonda's got
I always
a joke
do that, by
you.
The way.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
Well, good.
See, Rhonda, I have to pull back the curtain a little bit to put some context because, you know, she's wild. The backstory is Rhonda says, and I don't know. She knows the trucking industry. It's her industry. Right? Yeah, she knows the industry.
She drove
it. I knew it until 4 years ago.
Right. Did you have a stroke, Rhonda? I can't remember what happened.
No, after I retired, I started having seizures and blackouts.
Okay. All right. Okay, so.
But I don't have enough seizures to make Jiffy Pop, if any of you guys are old enough to remember Jiffy Pop.
Yes, the popcorn.
I do blackouts now and again.
Okay.
Yeah. Mike Morris did a blackout about 10 hours.
So Rhonda has a theory, and that she knows the industry, so I take it for it, but that there's a lot of illegal drivers out there. That's her thing. She says she could spot, by the truck.
Like my sumo driver?
She could tell by the way the truck is labeled or something. I don't understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I told you about that when I called the sheriff's department on Route 6 out here by the house the other day. And told them when I called them, I said, you better call ICE or call the state patrol. Because I can guarantee you this thing's going to be
finished. All right, I got it. All right. Now, how have things been with the neighbors? How have things been with the neighbors?
Semi-quiet since I already had the sheriff here this spring.
The Malik.
What did you tell the sheriff?
That the guy that I have a restraining order against was next door, and he's got a 500-foot restraining order.
Right.
Why? Did he threaten you or attack you? What happened?
No, a couple years ago, they were him and his buddy that lives next door were acting in very threatening manners. And Rhonda really doesn't want to have blood and guts in her gazebo because if they came over my fence and came after me, I'm going between the neck and the ends.
She is classic.
Save for center mass.
She's classic.
Hey, you told me not to say any dirty words.
Yeah, don't. You didn't.
I know I didn't. I'm filtering like Ronnie and Mildred and Carolyn and Shirley are in the room.
Yeah. She's naming all my relatives.
All right, is she your mom's side or dad's side?
She's on my mom's side.
Mom's side, okay.
My mom's side, yeah. So,
yeah.
What have you been doing to keep busy, though?
Are you working at all?
No. I'm legal to drive a car. I'm actually legal to drive a semi in the state of Ohio, but Becky only has an automatic transmission in her grain truck. So I said, I don't want to drive that. Automatic.
Where do you live in?
I love automatics.
Do you live in Toledo?
No, I live south of Toledo, kind of southeast, a little town called Bradner, Podunkville.
Bradner?
I live in the Black Swamp.
Bradner.
Yep.
Bradner. Okay.
Bradner. Who was the baseball player that played? Do you remember? I'm going to quiz Rhonda. Rhonda, do you remember who the Major League Baseball player that came from kind of our area?
That came from
that
Bradner?
Played for the Orioles.
Ooh.
Wasn't Chris Hoyles, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Chris Hoyles. Nice.
Names all over the signs going into Wayne because Chris was from Wayne, Ohio.
Baseball Rhonda.
By the way, population of Bradner as of 2020, 970.
Oof.
Oh, that's big. Rising Sun was 750 the last time I looked.
Yeah, my mom grew up in Rising Sun.
Rhonda, what do you do most evenings?
Drink beer and go to sleep. And if I don't feel like beer, I drink whiskey and Kroger Cola because Coke's too expensive.
Sounds like our evening upcoming.
But if you mix enough whiskey in there, you don't taste the generic cola, so...
What, Rhonda, did you have a route?
She is. She should be doing stand-up.
She's a fun girl.
She is fun.
Dude, Rhonda, where was you?
But you ain't even let me get to the joke yet.
I probably don't want you to.
Yeah, we can't.
Did you have a typical route that you would run?
For a while.
Yeah.
I was running from Romulus, Michigan to Winchester, Virginia the last time you guys talked to me in 2020, I was running... industrial cleaner all over the Midwest and East during COVID.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Did you ever have like a big accident
Winchester, Virginia.
You wrecked your truck?
I jackknifed in Oklahoma City, going off a ramp in the rain, running my pie hole on the CB, and the roads was wet,
right.
And jackknifed it and put the land. You guys don't know the difference between the landing gear and a pinhead, but I put the landing gear crank into the fuel tank.
Yeah, we don't know what that means.
It was jackknifed so tight, so right. I had to get out the passenger side.
Oh, my God.
Did it ruin the truck?
No, they blocked off the fuel tank, and another driver came and got the trailer, and the trailer ended up not having any brakes on it. Well, it had brakes on it, but they were way out of adjustment.
Right.
And I was loaded fairly heavy.
Did you make a lot of runs to D.C.?
I made a few, but most of them were like Arlington and outside. But I did a lot of Baltimore area, more so with hazmat.
You did hazmat? Did you ever drive?
That was the industrial cleaner.
What was it? What towns in the Baltimore area did you make runs to?
You're going to ask me, and then I'll have to text you the answer because I won't be able to think of it.
The percentage of women in your field?
I don't have a clue now. There wasn't very many when I started, but there's more now. But that's because they can only shift an automatic, which they don't have to shift anyways.
Because I've heard the term lot lizard. Can you fill us in on what lot lizards are?
Be careful. This
is a hooker.
It's a what?
Hooker. You could say that.
A hooker.
Yeah. Is that a real phenomenon?
Yeah, more so, I guess. I heard when I was in Tucson doing laundry, one guy says, well, you get most of it on the internet and it comes to you at the truck stop. Mm. It used to be on the CB. The last time I had one jump on my truck was in a rest area on the west side of Knoxville. And I told her to get a real effing job. And she got all indignant. And I said, now get off of my truck.
What do you mean? She climbed on your truck?
She probably thought, yeah, well,
I had the window cracked and...
She was trying to get some business.
Hey, Rhonda, did you always follow?
Yes, she was.
Rhonda, I think you were probably a rule follower, actually. Did you always?
No. Not at the beginning. Not during paper logs, but now they're going to go back to that. But that makes me a commodity. You're talking to a commodity. I could still shift gears, and I could still color real pretty in a logbook.
All right, hold on. Would you? Rhonda,
so what's the longest shift you ever did?
Yeah, did you follow the rules, though? And, like, what is it?
No,
You could do how many hours are you allowed to do straight?
The best I did, and one of you guys get your mileage up, the best I did without stopping much because I took a water pill the night before was South Bend, Indiana to Carl's Corners, Texas.
Wow. Right. How long was that drive?
I can't even make it to Dewey without
stopping. I don't know, about 740 some miles.
Do you have any water pills, Kate?
So what city in Texas? What is it? Carl's Corner?
Carl's Corners. It's south of Dallas-Fort Worth.
What was it? Rhonda,
where Willie Nelson's truck stop was.
What were you allowed to do? Like 8 hours at a time or 12 hours at a time?
Eight or ten.
I bet you typically followed it, though. I feel like you were actually a rules follower, no?
Well, when I was running from, Monroe... Louisville, Kentucky, to Wayne, Michigan.
Yeah.
I was running 753 miles a day, and we were allowed to log 11 hours a day, and I was logging 5.5 hours and then a break and then 5.5 hours.
Mm-hmm. How often did you sleep on the side of the road?
Like no, I would sleep in the rest area. Yeah. Maybe a get-on ramp. Never, ever on the shoulder. Never, ever.
But right. Don't we see that all the time? No. I mean, we see that all the time, like when 95 to 490 or whatever. Like, you get off 495.
Yeah, but it's usually by a rest stop.
But it's like the ramps.
Yeah, the ramps.
No, it's the ramps.
Sometimes they do, yeah.
Right?
But the get-on ramp.
They're not supposed to.
I've done that.
Uh-huh.
Well, the get-on ramp is one thing. That's where people are winding up. Not the get-off ramp where you're getting off the interstate, because that's where people get hit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
By the way, I think she might be a little out of his age group, but Drunk Mike and Rhonda would be a nice couple.
Well, they would. They could go pounce.
Drunk Mike and Rhonda. And Rhonda's not drunk. When you get as old as I am, turd, you can do this drunk, sober, or otherwise.
I need to see a picture. I need to put a face with a name.
All right, I got you. Right. Hey, what's your favorite whiskey, Rhonda?
Jack Black.
All right.
You going to send me a bottle? I need one. I'm hard up for money. I'm on Social Security.
Okay. Send her from Open Road.
Yeah, I'll get you the Open Road.
Don't make it a pint either.
Big one. The big boy.
Yeah, yeah.
The one like
the handle.
The one that like Slash drinks on stage. Because of Rose is the big one.
All right. Rhonda, thank you.
Do you want to hear my joke or not? Are you ready to truck horn me out of here?
All right,
I'd love to hear the joke. She earned it.
Hey, Rhonda.
As long as we don't get canceled for your dumb joke.
Are we going to be able to air it, or are we going to have to hit the dump button?
No, you're going to be able to air it.
No. All right, let's see.
I guarantee it's funnier than any joke Big John's ever
told. I got your finger ready, but I'm not going to cuss.
All right, hold on. It's not racist or anything, is it?
No.
Okay.
It's about a farmer and a truck driver.
All right, go ahead.
All right. This truck driver breaks down. And he sees this farmer working with his honeybees.
All right.
And the farmer walks over there like he's kind of scared. And the farmer says, "What's wrong with you?" The truck driver says, "Aren't you scared of those honeybees?" And the farmer says, "No." And he explains this truck's broke down. And the farmer says, "I'll make a deal with you. I'll make a bet with you. If you let me tie you buck naked spread eagle M2 trees over there, I'll give you $100 for every bee sting you get." Truck driver's thinking, "Okay, I can use that money to fix my truck." So he strips down bare naked. I even filtered the 3-letter word.
Thank you.
Anyways, the farmer ties him up, spread eagle, and he comes back that afternoon, and that truck driver's hanging there like he's dead.
Right.
He says, that farmer says, "You get stung by that many honeybees?" He says, "No, but doesn't that calf over there have a mother?"
Right. Big jump.
delayed reaction.
All right, now please explain it to me during the break. Explain it to me during the break.
Rhonda, thank you.
The bees didn't sting. The bull got them.
The bull, okay.
You guys miss me?
Rhonda, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, thank you, Rhonda. Please take care.
Hey, come to Dewey and stay with cakes.
Yeah. I got room.
Thank you, Rhonda.
Somebody send me a jug of the good stuff.
She wants
a drabby. She earned it.
We can hook that up. I'll talk to my boy.
We'll get you some old.
We'll take care of you.
Open Road.
Open Road. Yeah, we'll get some Open Road.
Don't get me any old turkey.
No. Open Road.
Open Road.
High quality.
We'll get you good
stuff.
We'll
take care of you.
All right, love
Eagle
you.
Eye Rye.
Love you, Rhonda. Yeah. Thank you.
Right. Eric, I'll send you my freaking address.
Oh, my God. She's a piece of work.
She is a wild one.
Hey, that's your blood, Eric. That's your blood.
I told you. When I told you I grew up, I was a brokey. We cut a burger 5 ways. Do you understand where I? Do you understand?
Humble beginnings.
Do you understand? It puts it in context. Hey,
that's in your family tree. It's the big limb on your tree.
All right, we're the Junkies. We'll be right back.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
At Lowe's, we're about to kick off something epic for fans who want more messy. And trust us, you'll want to be a rewards member when it happens. Join for free and get access to messy exclusives, surprises, and more. Head to Lowe's.com/more messy. Now's the time to get in because members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
How would you describe yourself? Fun? Sporty? Bold? If that's the case, meet the Kia K4 hatchback, made for motion, adventure, and whatever you might decide to bring along. Or would you say you're more smooth, sleek, refined? If so, there's the Kia K4 sedan. Calm, confident, and ever so modern. Two personalities, two available turbocharged ways forward. The Kia K4 GT Line Turbo and the K4 Hatchback GT Line Turbo. What turbos you? Turbo is available on select K4 trims.
Each year, KellyBlueBook.com ranks vehicles on the road for predicted future resale value. And for 2026, Toyota dominates the top of the list. 4Runner ranks number 3. The Tundra is number 2. And the Tacoma is number 1 overall again. The fact is, Toyota works hard on both ends of ownership. With special low APR financing rates available on Tacoma and Tundra right now at your local Toyota dealer. But also because you're getting trucks that are built to lead in affordability tomorrow. 4Runner, Tundra, and Tacoma are all expected to vastly outperform the average vehicle in resale value after 5 years of ownership, according to KBB, which can mean thousands more in your pocket when it's time to sell or trade in. That kind of affordability is hard to find anywhere else. So stop by your local Toyota dealer or visit Toyota.com and start shopping today. Projected resale value information is specific to the 2026 model year. For more information, visit Kelley Blue Book's KBB.com. Toyota, let's go places.